move to approve the minutes from the previous meetings.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes. Before we go any further, I would like to thank Miami University for allowing us to use your facility, this wonderful, new, beautiful facility. I was here when they dedicated the opening, and each time I come, I see more things. So it's just a wonderful facility, and we're so pleased it's here. Do you have anything you would like to speak to Chuck about Miami?
No, it's just a very impressive campus, and we do appreciate the hospitality, and it's super. It's good to see some dignitaries here. Sheriff Jones and George Lang, Township Trustee, and Gary Cates, State Senator, Senator Cates. And, of course, Dr. Hall, we do appreciate the use of your facility.
And Judy Boyko. And
sorry, Judy. Not in touch.
And also we have
Pat
and her husband with us this evening.
Bill.
Bill, yes. Thank you all. Thank you for coming. I'm not sure. Let's see. On the agenda, the first thing we have is a welcome by Dr. Hall.
Thank you, President Dixon, Commissioner Furman, and welcome everyone to Miami University's Voice of America Learning Center, the newest site in Butler County, service for Miami University, and the third site in what is an emerging regional campus system, joining Miami Hamilton, Miami Middletown, and VOA. Some might ask, why am I here as Dean of Miami Hamilton? And that is because, indeed, Miami Hamilton and Miami Middletown co-administer this site. The local and the most immediate administration, of course, is Mr. Rod Nimps. We all know Rod, and he has been a part of this project from the very beginning. He couldn't be with us this evening, so he sends his greetings and his regrets for not joining us today. I've been asked just to share a little bit with you, and quickly, in less than 30 minutes, so I promise, a little bit about this site. You know, many, many years of work and effort and vision have gone into bringing Miami to Westchester. There have been a number of individual courses in this community. We've had a number of occasions where we've celebrated the community support for this, the dedication, the ribbon cutting, and a number of events over the years. I'm not going to spend any time doing that. We've done that, but I do want to share with you what we're doing now and what the future looks like for Miami's New Voice of America Learning Center. We have had some important milestones, and President Dixon, we do appreciate that you were here for the dedication most recently representing this commission. It was an honor to have you. In January of this year, we had our first class offered at the site. First classes, actually. The first class was offered by a professor from Miami Hamilton, Dr. Brian King. We had our formal dedication then, of course, on April 17th. Again, you attended that. And what we have then today is a facility that opened to 26 undergraduate classes, 11 graduate classes in education, a total of 323 students enrolled at the undergraduate level and 163 students in one of the many Master of Education programs that we offer at the site, a total of 1,965 credit hours at the undergraduate and graduate level were offered this semester at this site. The facility itself includes a total of 8 different learning environments, including this 152-seat auditorium, a 40-person tiered classroom, two additional 40-person classrooms, two 24-person classrooms, one 16-person seminar room, computer classroom, computer labs, small meeting rooms, We are wireless and state-of-the-art throughout, although I have to be honest and say that our technology wasn't working this evening, but I think you gentlemen can understand what opening a new building is like, and it's kind of working out all the bugs. We're very proud of the facility in architecture and in quality. It is in every way fully Miami University, just as our academic programs are. We have, and we had some diagrams that you can't see, but we are prepared for future growth here. We have a total of 20 acres with an option, thank you to the Westchester Township, with an option of additional 20 acres in the future. Those 40 acres, we have a plan now to build out an additional 5 buildings, including in addition to this building. So we have plenty of room for growth. As Westchester and Liberty grow, so will this site for Miami University. We currently offer at this site a number of undergraduate classes that are intended to give people a start in the community. If you're interested in higher education, and you haven't had a start, this will be the place to do it. We're also going to offer our Bachelor of Integrative Studies. This is Miami's new innovative integrative degree. It has both professional elements, professional education elements, and liberal arts elements that can be combined together. That's why the integrative nature of it. We believe it is a very progressive 21st century degree that will prepare people to go into the workforce in the 21st century. It has a global element, a service learning element to get our students into the community before they graduate with the degree. We are offering already a number of master and education degree programs that are specifically tailored for local teachers. And beginning this fall, we're proud that the Farmer School of Business is going to be offering an Executive Master of Business Administration degree at this site solely. A person will be able to come here and finish the degree. Also at this site, we house our Corporate and Community Institute. Those that are familiar with the two regional campuses in Hamilton and Middletown know that we have a long history of corporate education, preparing people for the workforce, and preparing people who are already in the workforce. And we have merged those two offices in Hamilton and Middletown into one, and the VOALC is now the site for that organization that is providing service throughout the region. Miami's Alumni Career Services is represented at this site, and of course, we hope to bring our co-curricular strength of all three campuses to this site. So our programming on all three sites of lectures and of and workshops and concerts and all of that we hope to bring to bear to the VOALC as well. And we're working very hard. We have a large number of Miami alumni that live in the Westchester, Northern Cincinnati, and Liberty Township region, and this is going to become the hub for alumni activity for these individuals. We have significant plans. We have room for growth. We know that there are additional degree programs that are needed in the area. We're in the midst right now of a three-county study to determine what the next most important degree programs are needed in the area to really satisfy local workforce needs. We're going to look at that. We'll be talking to the leadership here as well as in Hamilton and Middletown to design what the next stage of degree programming will be. Miami's regional campuses and all three sites, this site, Hamilton and Middletown, in the future will be focused on developing new baccalaureate degree programs. We know that there's great need in the area, so we look forward to that. I'll be happy to answer any questions that the commissioners have.
I don't have any either, Dr. Hall. Thank you very much.
We have a gift for you. For our commissioners, thank you for...
Thank you.
Thank you, Doc.
Small gift from Miami.
Thank you.
And you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. We're really excited. This is our first night meeting of the term, and we're excited about being here in Westchester, especially to have it our first one here, and we look forward to many more. So we have approved the minutes. We have a few agenda items. First on the agenda will be Martha Shelby, and Martha's going to be taking the place of Bob Loventree this evening. Martha?
Thank you. Good evening. I'm here just to speak a bit about the proposed updates to the developer's manual. This original manual was created in 2005 to facilitate the development process. This manual consolidated our development policies into one reference document. This is a tool that's available to everybody on our website. In order to keep it current and updated as needed, most of the changes are very minor. They're just updating things such as the current fee schedules, formatting, and updating our name. Each of these proposed changes have been reviewed during several coordination meetings with the Ohio Valley Development Council and the Home Builders Association of Cincinnati, and they are in concurrence with all of the changes. Exhibit A is a spreadsheet that details all the changes listing the existing language and the proposed language. The most significant changes regarding the plan review and construction inspection fees, the maintenance bond, reimbursements, and loan limitations. Plan review fees and construction inspection fees have historically been calculated based upon a percentage of the engineer's estimate or the contractor's bid, depending on whether it was the plan review fees or the construction inspection fees. We found that market fluctuations with the material cost caused the fees to increase while our costs actually stayed constant. So we queried the surrounding agencies to see how they managed their fees, and found that some used estimates, like we were, some used hourly rates, and others used a fee based upon the length of the pipe that was to be installed. We feel the most equitable means of calculating fees would be based upon the length of the pipe. This also has the added plus of not having the administrative burden of billing the contractor and tracking the hours. The maintenance bond period is proposed to remain at 1 year. However, we propose to send out notification letters earlier in the process and promptly involve the bonding company if the final inspection is not completed. This will push the process along since developers can not have the expense of renewing their bonds, and then the county will not have the risk of having the bond expire without the work being complete. As far as the reimbursement process, there are no changes to the process itself, except we're requesting that anybody requesting a reimbursement submit the request along with any justification within 90 days of the improvement being accepted for connection. We found in the past that sometimes there's been a delay in getting the paperwork to us, and it's been frustrating mostly on the developer's part because it's difficult after a couple of years to come up with the justification that we require to establish the reimbursement amount. So if we get the request in within 90 days, these documents will be more readily available. The last significant change is we've added a section on wastewater station design, inspection, and acceptance. There's really no changes. It's just that this process and procedures never been written down before. We felt that it would be an added thing for the developers to be able to see the whole process and have the process and procedures written down for them. So that's really it. There's not any major significant changes, as you can see. Are there any questions?
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Next, we have Mike Yingling. Mike is the Butler County Development, heads of the Butler County Development Department. He's going to discuss the revolving loan fund.
Revolving loan fund plan, which is what we're asking a few approval for tonight, and then these are copies of the revolving loan fund brochure.
Let me start off by giving you a little history about the revolving loan fund and the revolving loan fund plan, which we're asking for approval for tonight. The Revolving Loan Fund was established back in 1984 with CDBG funds. At the time, the county applied for an economic development grant through the state of Ohio through the CDBG Small Cities Program. It was a $200,000 grant, and in order to receive that grant, the county had to establish a fund for the paid back monies to go into. And at the time, I was working for the county and wrote the plan for the Revolving Loan Fund. That fund was replenished through the paybacks of that grant, and from time to time, we put CDBG money into that fund and let it build little by little through the additional loans and paybacks and servicing fees and monitoring fees that were charged. And right now, the fund has in it, if I get it right, a total of $911,086, of which $686,683 are out in loans, and $224,403 is the balance that we have available for loans. Over the years, we have made 69 different loans. 61 of them have been repaid. We have 7 current, and in all that time, only one loan has gone bad, and that's been in the last year, and we're in the process of settling that. Eligibility requirements for the loan include the business must be an existing business. We would not do loans to startups. It must be industrial or manufacturing. It's for fixed assets, for plant expansion, plant construction, or equipment. And a minimum of one job must be created for every $35,000 in loan money. 51% of the jobs, since this was established with the Community Development Block Grant, 51% of the jobs must be made available to low and moderate income households. And we will not loan out more than 50% of the project cost. Minimum loan size is $15,000, and we don't loan out any more than one-third of the funds that we have available on hand. So we don't want to loan it all out in one loan. We want to keep it available for other loans that come to us. The maximum loan, like I say, cannot be more than a third of what we have available, and it's for fixed asset financing. And the loan fund is self-sufficient now. It's replenished with paybacks of principal, interest. We have an application fee of $300 and a servicing fee of 0.5% of the loan the amount being loaned out, with a minimum of $300 and a maximum of $1,000. What we are asking today is that the commissioners approve this plan so that we can reestablish an independent board for the Revolving Loan Fund. A little bit more of the history of the fund. When it was established, a board was established to review the loan applications and make recommendations to the county commissioner. The county commissioners have the final say on these loans. And that's the way it was established back in the early 80s or the mid 80s. Then in 91, the Department of Development was handling the Certified Development Company and the Revolving Loan Fund. And the Certified Development Company board was doing the SBA 504 loans, but they were also making recommendations on the Revolving Loan Fund as well. In the past year, the Certified Development Company became an independent agency, and the Revolving Loan Fund had to stay with the county because it was established with Community Development Block Grant. So what we're doing now is just updating this plan to reestablish that board that was in place back when it was first established. So that's what we're asking for tonight, that this plan, which includes some of the things that I outlined and reestablishing that board. and getting that back in place. So we're asking approval for that tonight.
Okay. Any questions?
Thanks, Mike. I remember when you started that, or when you wrote the plan, and it's been very successful. And look forward to continuing.
Thank you. I know what you're thinking. Time. I was about 10 years old at the time.
No. You do look a little different, though.
Yeah, I do.
I'm sure I don't.
That's right.
Thanks. Yeah, Mike, what else?
If there are no other questions, Tim also asked me if I would give you a brief update of what's been going on with the economic development practice in the county since we have taken it over in our department. Things are starting to settle down a little bit. The staff has been doing a great job in getting up to speed and making the transition as seamless as possible from the old staff to the new staff. And we've got a number of good staff members that are working on their tasks from the past as well as economic development. Victoria Asher has been, who is our portfolio manager, she has been taking on the enterprise zone agreements and comparing what's been agreed upon with what was submitted as far as reports and making sure that they are in compliance. We are finding with the hard economic times there will be some amendments that we'll be requesting once we get through all of this. We're starting to put the information together to set up the Tax Incentive Review Council meeting. Probably do that later in the summer or early in the fall. Joe Smith has been doing a great job with our site inventory and getting the leads to the local communities, and then the local communities submit the sites to us, and then we forward them on to either the state, the Cincinnati Chamber, or local developers who are looking for clients, they're looking for sites. Joe's also been keeping our website up to date, along with Lee Margraff, our secretary, keeping that up to date, and putting up to date statistics in there as well. David Fair has been working on responding to leads and putting the prospect packets together. Don Everson and I Victoria Asher have been making site visits with the companies. It's been going pretty well. We have met with all the economic development staff people throughout the county from all the local communities. In fact, we held a joint meeting of everyone to share information about procedures and about working cooperatively together. And everybody was in agreement that we will start bi-monthly meetings to keep up to date with coordinating various issues. And we're going to be bringing people in from the outside to do presentations for us. Some people from the Ohio Department of Development are coming down in June to talk to us about enterprise zone agreements and community reinvestment areas, and what possibly is going to be coming in as far as new legislation for incentive programs. The leads processing is going well. Like I say, we get the information out to the local communities, and the local communities submit sites to us. There still are a lot of companies that are interested in the county. Since we've been doing this for the last 2 months, we have helped put packets together for 41 different leads that have come through the state. As of yet, nothing has come about with any of those. Some companies may just be putting feelers out there just to see what's out there and available for when the economy picks back up. We're doing servicing on enterprise zone agreements, like I said, and comparing what has been submitted on their reports, what they're actually accomplishing as far as job creation if compared to what was in the agreement. I've been working with all the different chambers in the county, as well as the Cincinnati Chamber and the Dayton Chamber, mostly making contacts in that regard. We're updating and trying to simplify the economic development webpage. Been working with Workforce One, as well as BizTech, the incubator in Hamilton. So we got a lot going on, but people seem to be settling into their new roles, and I think it's going pretty well.
Good. Thanks, Mike. We have with us this evening Pat Berg and Pamela Walker-Bauer, and Pat's going to talk to us about a health issue.
One that I'm sure no one's heard anything about until tonight. Good evening. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to address the commission this evening. We appreciate your time and your commitment to public health in Butler County. Pam and I would like to update you on the activities of the Butler County Health Department and of our state health department over the past 10 days or so regarding H1N1 or swine flu. We'll give you a brief presentation and then open to any questions that you might have. As of noon today, there are 286 cases confirmed in the United States, in 36 states, with one death. There are 3 confirmed cases in Ohio with no deaths. There is 1 case in Lorain County, and there are 2 confirmed cases in Franklin County. Conference calls have been held daily with our local regional public health partners, with the Ohio Department of Health, and with the local regional EMA officials for an exchange of information and so that we can keep each other informed and updated on current activities. 25% of the strategic national stockpile has been shipped from the federal government. Ohio received our allocation in Columbus on Tuesday of last week, and that stockpile was prepositioned to 8 regional nodes across the state under heavy security. One of the Ohio Department of Health conference call yesterday, one of our partners who had been with the Ohio Department of Health for a number of years, stated how impressive it was to stand and look at the strategic national stockpile that we've had delivered for the first time. And he said it almost took up the size of a football field. And he said it was just unbelievable to stand and look at what we were viewing. It was broken down to go to these 8 nodes and then left by National Guard with Ohio Highway Patrol as well for security. So quite a new event in public health. The stockpile includes antivirals, which are to be used for treatment only, and has personal protective equipment, including masks and gloves. And that's to be utilized on the local level as needed if our local supplies run short. The Butler County Preparedness Committee met last Wednesday, and that committee is comprised of police, law enforcement, the Sheriff's Department has a member on that committee, Fire and EMS, Westchester, Fire Department has a representative on that committee, business, local business, both large and small in Butler County, hospitals, schools, public health, and a number of other folks who also serve on that committee. There was discussion centering about what was going on, where we thought we were going from here, and a general update for those people. As you can well understand, this is a dynamic situation, it's a fluid situation, and we're getting new information constantly as the virus continues to be studied. And certainly some of our recommendations for control and prevention are changing daily as additional information is being received. We've been responding to questions from the community and triaging concerns. Primarily the questions that we've gotten have been received from schools, businesses, physicians' offices on reporting, on testing. Not a whole lot from the general public, so I think that possibly the press and all the information that we're getting has pretty much been out there and let the public know what we're doing in public health. The virus has been relatively mild to date when we look at a normal flu season. We look at quite a number of cases reported, and we are right now in this part of the country at the tail end of our regular flu season. And I know that you've probably all heard the number that approximately 36,000 people per year die in this country from seasonal flu. So we can put that into perspective to what we're seeing now. The recommendations here still remain to cover your cough, your mouth and nose with a tissue if you cough or sneeze. If you don't have a tissue, then sneeze or cough into your arm. Stay away from sick people as much as you can, and don't go to work or send your kids to school if they're ill. So we'll use the social distancing as the best prevention right now. I'd like to introduce Pamela Walker-Bauer. Pam is the lead epidemiologist for Butler County. So I'd like to have her say a few words, and then if you have any questions, we'll be happy to answer.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having us here tonight. And I'm probably going to bore you a little bit because I like to talk about the science and the reason why this is such a big deal. You know, Pat has talked about the things that we are doing at the Butler County Health Department along with our key stakeholders and partners. But I'm going to tell you why this swine flu is such a big deal, the science behind it. Just so you know, every year in this country, we do see several cases of swine flu. Swine flu is typically an organism that you find in pigs or swine. They get flu just like the way that we get flu. But what the big deal is with this virus, this H1N1 virus, as we're hearing it called now, is that it's being transmitted rapidly from person to person. So what we've seen in the past is that a person would get swine flu and then get over it and get better. But now this virus has mutated in some way where I can have the virus and turn around and give it to Pat and then turn around and give it to Mr. Furman here, and then we can spread it rapidly. So the concern is that this swine flu, this new virus, may be the next pandemic. And pandemic is just a fancy word for a worldwide outbreak, okay? This is showing all the signs that this could possibly lead to this, and we are continue to watch it. Scientists continue to watch this for any kind of mutations in any way. The more it spreads person to person, the more chances there are for that to occur. Again, we have no previous immunity to this, we humans, so that's why this is such a problem. And the thing about flu is that you can have symptoms, you can be sick, you can be spreading the virus 2 to 4 days before you even realize that you're sick. So that's the implications, and that's probably why you're seeing, and some people will say, you know, this is overreacting, you're doing entirely too much. But the nature of flu, the organism itself, is that you could be out everywhere and sharing this virus and not really know that. So the potential is there. And again, as Pat talked about, you know, some of the things that you can do until, hopefully, we have a vaccine available is just use common sense practices like covering your cough and sneezing into a tissue. You know, again, stay home if you're sick. And, you know, that's something to think about as well that concerns me in the public health community. We, coming into hard economic times right now, not everybody has the luxury of having sick days. So that's something we need to be very concerned about and think about when we have folks that need time off, okay? It's something for businesses to think about and how they're going to plan for that in some way, maybe have some idea of how you're going to compensate or make up for those employees that may not be there. And really, if again, as Pat talked about, just using those prevention techniques ahead of right now until we have a vaccine available. We do have some brochures that we brought a couple with us, but we do have plenty of these in our office. If anybody would like any of these, we'll be glad to share them with you. And it just gives you some steps, some easy guidelines on what you can do to prepare for the next pandemic. Is there any questions for us?
No. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you. Tim, you want to take us through the resolutions to be adopted this evening?
Certainly. First, we have two separate resolutions to be adopted. First is agenda-related, relating to the developer's manual that have been described by Martha Shelby. So we need a motion.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Secondly, agenda-related, Mr. Mike Yingling gave a report on the reestablishment of the revolving loan fund, so that will be via separate motion.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Then as we go into the agenda, we have communications. We have two travel requests to consider today. First is from the Butler County Sheriff's Office, Matt Franke, to attend the 8th APCO and NENA Executive Committee meeting, Worthington, Ohio, $149, May 12th and May 13th. Secondly, from the Area 1 Court, Gary L. Miller, to attend the Ohio Peace Officer Training Academy on the Bailiff Court Officer Basic Training, $2,500, London, Ohio, from the period May 31st to June 26th. As we move into finance and appropriation, we have five items for you to consider tonight. The first item is the general fund, and this is the transfer of $5,029 to the Marine Patrol Grant Fund. That's Fund 1019. Next, we have an increase in appropriations or budget of $6,380 for the Sheriff VOCA Fund. This is to reappropriate the current fiscal year and the 09 fiscal year for this particular grant, which is Fund number 1000. Next, in the capital improvements fund, we have a transfer between accounts in the amount of $28,000 to enable purchases. Then under, that's Fund 2000, Fund 2211, this is the Hamilton Mason TIP fund. We have an increase of budget of $110,000 in order to pay relocation of utility costs. Finally, under the fifth item, under the Workers' Compensation Fund, Fund 5000, we also have an increase of budget of $110,000 to cover the additional rate that was charged this year for workers' comp. As we move on to personnel, we have seven personnel actions to consider tonight. First is to hire Gina Marshall as temporary summer youth employment program coordinator in Job and Family Services at a rate of $22.63 per hour, effective May 25th. This position is a temporary position, and this position relates to the American Recovery and Reimbursement Act, where a summer works program is being created in Butler County. Butler County is being allotted $1.8 million for the summer works program to enable the employment of nearly 250 people between the ages of 16 and 24 for the period January through September. So in order to market and make businesses aware that positions are available, workforce is available, this particular position that we're designating today as a coordinator will help market and then supervise the four other supervisors that will work with an estimated 250 people that might be employed as part of this program. Second item in personnel, we have approved a probationary step increase for Carlos Chang. This step increase is from $15.17 to $15.66, and he also receives a bilingual supplement, bringing his total hourly wage to $16.91, and this is effective April 25th, 2009. Next, we have a annual step increase for Terry Reed, collective bargaining unit member, Job Family Services, retroactively back to April 11th, 2009, to the rate of $17.26, a 3.8% change. Next, we have an annual step increase for Vicki Lawwell, collective bargaining unit member in Job Family Services, to $18.66, a 3.8% change effective May the 9th. Next, we have a step increase for Judy Bohm, a collective bargaining unit member in Job Family Services, to $16.43, a 3.3% change effective April 25th. And next, we have a step increase and a retroactive to April 11th for Jane Donjans. She's a collective bargaining unit member in Job and Family Services, to $16.60, a 3.3% change. Next, for the county care facility, you're asked to accept and place on file a list of the care facility's personnel actions. These actions include the hiring of four individuals, one LPN, two RNs, and one STNA. The termination of an STNA, and then two disciplinary actions involving two STNAs at the facility. We've received resignation of three individuals at the facility, and we have a change in status of four people at the county care facilities. And then finally, we have a step increase. This is a five-year step increase for three people at the Butler County Care Facility. Next, as we move on to Job Family Services, we have one contract or one legislation to consider tonight, and this is an agreement with Melody Grosser for family counseling services for the period April 1, 2009 to April 30th, 2010, in amount not to exceed $15,000. The engineer has a request for your consideration tonight, and that is to approve the City of Middletown's request for funds from the Permissive Motor Vehicle Tax Fund for street maintenance in the amount of $36,991. Under miscellaneous, we have two items this evening. First is to advertise bids for leasing storage space for the Butler County Record Center and to purchase an installation of archival shelving and the cost to move or relocate records. And then the final item under miscellaneous, we have a request to approve and execute a window washing agreement with Braco Window Cleaning Service for the exterior of the Government Services Building in the amount of $5,382. And then finally, we have before you 25 requests for payments that under the then announced certificates.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes. Tim, I got one question. When is that wage survey that we were supposed to have in February? It was moved to March. When are we going to have that finished?
Survey or the plan?
The plan.
I've got it. I still have to review it and get it to you. I've got a proposal right now that I'll get to you this week.
Just to touch on that, just it's kind of ironic that Commissioner Furman mentioned something today that I had a conversation with Senator Cates about related somewhat to the county being able to have the ability to furlough some of our employees rather than have being forced to do a layoff. And kind of what brings us around to that, or what brought me around to that this evening, was I sit here and I see all these step increases and all this stuff continues to come on and come on. We're supposed to have a wage study done in February. Then it was moved to March, or a survey, a reduction survey study in March. Now it's May. We're halfway through the year, and we know we're almost $4 million upside down. And while we got Senator Cates here, I think would like to maybe share with him some of our concerns. One of them is that if we could. Somehow get some relief or get some way of dealing with that issue. We heard that it was supposed to somehow be introduced into the Senate side of the budget bill, which I don't know if that's accurate or not accurate, or maybe it's a separate bill. Tim, do you know?
I think it's supposed to be part of the budget bill.
So, Gary, do you know anything about that? Okay.
There was, to my knowledge, there was not in language that began with county as a state or state commission.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you hear anything up there, and Commissioner Furman had the same thoughts I did tonight, I think it would be helpful if we could, Commissioner Furman, pass a resolution maybe to CCAO asking them if they could, if they're not working on it, if they could. And also maybe Gary could take our concerns to the other legislators and see if you can somehow you can help us move that issue.
I would make a motion to that effect. Looking at today's paper where the state is utilizing this method, we would like to do it as well to keep from having the layoffs. Obviously, we want to do what we can. We've done a lot of layoffs, I guess you'd say, through attrition, but this would keep us from having to do more layoffs if we can utilize the furlough system. And it can be done in many ways, either through the year or I guess a week or two at a time, something like that, to get us to where we need to be financially.
Yeah, exactly, and I think the furlough system is a way to protect jobs, not to have to cut jobs, so that would be a way to do that. And while we're on that topic, I think, Tim, you brought up to me last week about asking the unions to reopen all their contracts.
Freeze on steps and general increases, and you know, try to extend it through the period of 2010, because 2009 and 2010 are going to be two very difficult years for us.
So do you need a resolution from this board asking the bargaining units to open contracts?
That would be fine. We have a motion on the table now. That involves a request to the state, and particularly to the Senate, to consider language in the budget bill to allow for furloughs. That Chuck has passed a motion on. So we'll do
a second there.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
And Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
In addition to just some further discussion about the furlough, the County Commissioner Association has been actively engaged, you know, in this, and has been in contact with the various people at the Capitol. So I have spoken with them personally myself, as well as Doug Duckett. We do know that I think on the on the representative side, that nothing got included. We're hoping, Gary, that something can be tacked on to the Senate bill, and hopefully would survive any conference between the two houses to enable us. Just to give you an example, a two-week furlough is equivalent to a 3.8% reduction, in compensation, which would be very helpful in the practice of trying to manage. Manage and balance our budgets this year. I will note that Hamilton County recently, as of just a few days ago, did announce an across-the-board 3.8%, reduction in all of their budgets. And I'm doing the math in my head, thinking that maybe hoping for the same result, that furloughs would give us a tool to use with our budget process here. So that motion being made and passed, we have a second motion to initiate communication with our collective bargain unit organizations in order to initiate reopener language to discuss a freeze on step and annual increases or increases relative to the contracts.
I wouldn't tie it down to that those terms exactly. Okay. I would think we need to open up negotiations to see how we can reduce our budget.
Very well.
And they may have some other ideas along those lines.
Okay. I've got a motion.
We need to start that opener, though.
And make sure Doug has this information and is kept up to breast on all this.
Sorry.
You need a motion on that?
Well, we have a motion by Mr. Dixon.
Second.
Second by Mr. Furman. Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes. I think it's important that we don't sit here and pretend like, and we're not, but I think our silence, we are kind of not bringing to the forefront the financial issues that we have to deal with. And right now we're heading towards $4 million short of our expected revenue for 10. We have to use every tool in the toolbox to deal with this issue, and furloughs may well be one of them that could save some jobs and get us through this, because it does look like the economy may be bottoming, and we've certainly maybe looking some upward trends, even slow as it may be. Okay. Commissioner Furman, do you have
anything? I don't have anything else at this time.
We'll go to the audience for any comments, questions, statements. Anyone?
George wants to say anything.
George? And Sheriff?
I'm a man of a few words. Do you really want me to speak? Okay, I didn't think so.
Judy, have anything?
Anyone else? Judy, anybody? Well, I'd like to,
Mrs. Lang, we appreciate that.
I would like to thank all of our employees for putting this together and all of our staff. It's extra work on their part. They've done an excellent job. And again, I'd like to thank Miami University for inviting us and for all of you for coming tonight. Thank you.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Mr. Dixon?
Yes.
Mr. Furman?
Yes.
Thank you.